So I want to welcome everyone here to this UUA Presidential Candidates Forum with the UUA Board of Trustees. We're gathered here on Thursday, January 15, 2009. It's a cold night in Boston. We're gathered here at Elliott Chapel at 25 Beacon Street, Boston. I'm Paul Richter, UUA Secretary. And I'm here welcoming you, and I'm welcoming our two candidates for UUA president. They are the Reverend Laurel Hallman and the Reverend Peter Morales. In preparation for this forum, I gathered questions from members of the Board of Trustees. I gathered 33 questions. We're not going to have time in 90 minutes to cover all 33 of those questions. But we thought we'd take a little bit of a different approach with this forum, and we're dividing it up into five segments that will each be about 15 minutes, perhaps a little longer as is needed to wrap up the conversation of those five segments. Each of those five segments will have a moderator who will be asking each of you questions and engaging in conversation, trying to have it more of a conversation than simply lobbing questions back and forth between the moderator and the candidates. The five segments we picked are policy governance transition, which will be moderated by John Blevins, board president relationship, which will be moderated by Will Saunders, finance, which will be moderated by Dan Brody, administration, which will be moderated by Jackie Shanti, and UU polity, which will be moderated by Eva Marks. So to begin, I introduce John Blevins to talk about policy governance transition.
Thank you, Paul, and welcome. Glad to have you with us. Thank you. Well, obviously, you know at this point, we're deep into a transition to policy governance, a big change, a cultural change for the organization. From your perspective, what are the opportunities that you see in front of us in this transition? What excites you, perhaps, about the opportunities that lay before us? And I don't know, how do we want to do this? Who wants to go first?
I'll go first.
Laurel? Okay.
Having made this transition, having spent several years in making this transition and working in policy governance, I can see the light at the end of the tunnel, and it's not a train. The opportunities are quite wonderful in this process. It may be hard to see it when you're in the middle. But what I've experienced is that the people, first of all, your responsibilities are very defined. So you know what it is you should do and how you can find out if you are doing it. The responsibilities and accountabilities are very clear. It clears a lot of the muddiness that I think we've been experiencing lately. That will settle. It also frees people up to spread out the leadership and the responsibility. So one group of people doesn't have to know everything all the time. It's hard to let go of sometimes, but it opens up the leadership to be broadly understood and carried. So there'll be fewer people with all of the responsibility, more people with some of it, but they'll all be aligned. And thirdly, there is a structure of trust that builds in this process that's quite important. It's the faith side of this process. We learn, because you have accountabilities that are built in, you evaluate on the basis of what you've already decided to evaluate on, you can then build the trust relationships that you need to build between and among the people. There are many more liberating things about it, but I think that's a start.
Thank you. Peter?
I think the core advantage is the opportunity to be much more effective in achieving those ends that we've agreed upon. I believe that we're a religious culture, luckily, thankfully, that does not have deep disagreements about ends. I mean, I sometimes joke that we have no faction arguing for shrinking our faith and for becoming increasingly irrelevant in the world. I mean, we don't have, and nor do we have these these awful things that divide other people. There is really broad, and I think we've seen it in the last couple of days. The what is good if we use the tool well, and it's always a matter of using any tool well, is that we can focus, we can have clarity, we can have a level of accountability and measurement that we've never seen before in our operations. But all those are means toward accomplishing those things we want to do about growing our faith and becoming much more effective in affecting the world around us.
Thank you. Well, we've only had a chance to talk briefly about the actual transition that will be happening as one of you joins us this summer. On top of that transition that we'll be in the midst of, where does your uneasiness lie in this transition? Where do we need to be paying attention with you to get through rough spots that you might anticipate from your experience?
There are two places where we might run into some issues. One would be getting lost in the weeds, forgetting the goals, forgetting the larger picture in the process of making ends language. And it's easy. Today we've struggled with that. Mm-hmm. Don't get lost in the weeds, and yet you've got to form the language. That's one difficulty that I could see. The second would be not fully implementing, but doing a kind of pseudo policy governance and not taking the final leap of trust to figure out that we won't know everything all the time and that we will have to put on paper what we want and figure out ways to find out whether that's happening. That won't be quite so easy. And that we'll have some fear and won't fully implement. That I would be worried about. I have another one, and that is that that we won't connect our expectations with our evaluations. So that, and I've seen this happen where we'll come in behind and say, "Oh, you shouldn't have done that," when in fact it was never said that you shouldn't. That wasn't made a limitation. So that we have alignment of what we're expecting and what is being done. That when that gets out of kilter, it causes problems.
Thank you. Peter?
Let me talk about concerns in two areas. One is from the side of the board, and the other one's from the side of the president. I think the board needs to steer between what I call pure poetry and meddling. In the one level, ends can be so vague and poetic that they're hard to translate into something that's practical. And yet, just as you were a couple hours ago discussing, the other side is that if they get too detailed and too prescriptive, they become a constraint rather than something that releases energy. That's the danger that I think the board has to steer between. On the other side, one of the ones during the transition as opposed to the longer-term implementation, I think there's a danger that the reporting can get so cumbersome and so detailed that it ends up sucking energy away from accomplishing the ends because you're spending so much energy in preparing elaborate and detailed reports to wow the board and who's doing the evaluation. So there has to be expectations that are clear around that. What is enough information and what's enough detail? And that get the administrative part of that is making it really clear down through the organization about what's needed in terms of that evaluation. And a little piece of that is there's always a danger that we will measure what's easy to measure instead of measuring what's important. Because certain kinds of measures that are statistical that you get, you can fall in love with, even though they're not particularly powerful indicators of anything. Or public education's a wonderful example of this. Of course, kids should learn to read and do algorithms, but if you focus on that so much, you corrupt the curriculum. you start sucking energy away from those things that are much more difficult to evaluate around creativity and critical thinking skills. I don't want that kind of pattern to move into the association.
Can I just respond thing?
Just
respond to that. One of the difficulties I realized when Peter was speaking is one of the difficulties is the use of metaphor. Because we are a religious organization, we speak metaphorically. And one of the difficulties is interpreting whether a metaphor is actually carrying deep truth or is too abstract. And it's a constant issue that I think we have to attend to. We are somewhat metaphor shy because often traditional religious language is metaphorical. And so we're a little shy about some of the metaphors that are in common usage. Using metaphorical language as in end statement is very important. And we have to be very clear about the depth dimension of the metaphorical language in our end statements and how we can possibly measure that. It's a difficulty in this particular system.
I must ask, is this something you were able to accomplish in your Dallas congregation to build that metaphorical language in? I'd love to see an example, but can you?
Yeah, I would love to be able to give you one. We work at it. When you talk about the life of with the holy, that you're being metaphorical, you do it all the time, and you've done it all the time here.
Okay.
It's just that to speak to the fact that we are dealing in metaphors, and they have the potential for being too abstract, but they also have the potential for carrying deep truth, and we just need to be aware of that.
To know the difference. Okay, thanks. I'm going to dive in to policy governance a bit, and almost metaphorically. Not really. But John Carver in his principles, for example, raises the question, what kind of committee should you have? And in particular, do you need a finance committee? Is that taking away the ability of the board to speak with one voice, as is called for in the principles, to have a committee such as the Finance Committee? We have one. Our current thinking is we'll continue that for a while as we learn more. I would appreciate your insights in thinking about the role of a committee such as the Finance Committee in this model we're moving into. And Peter, I'll let you tackle this one first.
I'll tackle it. And similar, because a lot of these things are going to come up, and they do all the time. I've become a great believer in that it's very difficult to anticipate that in any detail, any nuance. So what you do is you launch in and make corrections along the way. In other words, I don't know how well having a finance committee is going to work, whether it's going to seem cumbersome or out of sync. But if it does, you don't keep doing it forever. You don't keep doing it for 3 or 4 years after you realize it's not effective. So it's going to be important, I want to be careful here because that's really the board's and not the president's, but for the board to evaluate its own processes in an ongoing way and just take that pulse. You know, are we okay with that? What is another alternative to look at other possibilities and explore those?
I feel strongly that we should not have a finance committee. My experience is we do not have a finance committee. I know this is a different thing we're doing here. And I would also say, let's write down exactly what the functions of the Finance Committee are and see where those functions would go between administration and the president's staff side. But in the end, I believe that the Finance Committee is considered a monitoring committee. That's really what we're trying to do, is get a handle on what's really happening. And if our monitoring goals and processes are well done, I don't believe we'd need a finance committee. I can say more about that in some of the processes that are handled by the finance committee, but basically that would be my answer.
Yeah. I suspect the finance committee would love to have a deeper conversation about that.
Yeah.
Because we're wrestling with it too. But
yeah, I would like to have that conversation.
Moving on. There's this process of the board writing the ends, the president then interpreting those to turn them into what does that mean to me, how do I act on it, and how do I report to the board. Talk to me about how you see that process, how you would approach that. How do we make it work most successfully to build that trust relationship? And who would like to take this
one first? I'll go ahead.
Okay.
The board work is the board work, and the work of the president and the staff is the work of the president and the staff, and there's one line between them, and if you look at an org chart in this kind of governance. And so I want to be clear that I understand that. And at the same time, all of my career I've been collaborative. And so I wouldn't expect that the board would come up with ends that were a big surprise to me, that were handed to me would be a big surprise. I would expect that there would be back and forth discussion and understanding among us so that the ends language and then the implementation of it would be pretty much known. That's what the collaborative part is. There's an informal process that goes on that helps us talk to each other about what we're doing and figure out where the bumps are before we solidify them or cast them into stone. So the process is collaborative. The lines of accountability are very, very clear.
Okay. Thanks.
In terms of the interpretation, I think several things would need to be done. It's important that go fairly deep into the organization in the response that for example, if we're talking about being more multicultural, it is critical within the UUA as an organization, the staff, that input on that come from different places, especially IDBM, for example. That accomplishes several things. You very quickly communicate well all through the organization that the description and response to these things is important, and people know what they are, so they get tuned in right away. And then those are vetted, refined along the way. So that's that part. And then later on, it's a process of dialogue. I really worry much more, not about ending up with those statements, because in fact, I really believe as I look at these, and having worked at the senior staff level, you know, just the work that's been done already, the ends that you're creating now, to the extent that you've created them, would have been the same 4 years ago or 6 or 7 years ago or with very little difference because they're very consistent, what we want as an organization. I think that our real challenge is about being effective in realizing those. That's what's critical for us. We've wanted to grow and to be more diverse and to have more of an impact in the world and social justice forever. Our challenge is really to get our act together and to release the idealism and the passion that is there in our movement and remove barriers.
So I think that I'm hearing that you see this process of interpretation, formally called, and driving that deep down into the staff will let us get much crisper about expectations.
Well, especially when those are linked with measurements, sure.
Okay.
Yeah, and milestones. Okay. That's what makes an organization move.
Okay.
And when there are consequences along the way.
Okay.
Let me add that when there's a clarity of relationship between the board and the administration, parenthesis president, when there is alignment, that releases a great deal of energy. And so you would get a lot more energy and clarity all the way down the system if the alignment between the board and the president was clear and crisp.
I don't want to make too much of this. I don't want to be artificial. But I think there's a distinction here that I do want to draw attention to, that alignment is necessary but not sufficient. You still need the administrative and management acumen to turn that into effective action and to measure whether that's getting done. I mean, I know congregations that are using congregational polity that are thriving and others that are using it that are struggling. It can be a very important tool, but it's not automatic. That clarity about the ends doesn't accomplish the ends.
Thank you.
I would agree.
Thank you, John, for moderating that. That was a wonderful segment.